Senate Rules Committee will begin. It is Wednesday, April 6th. It is approximately 1:47 p.m. Colleagues, why don't we establish a quorum? Madam Secretary, please call the roll.
Senators Cannella.
Here.
Cannella here. Leyva.
Here.
Leyva here. Mitchell.
Here.
Mitchell here. Runner. De Leon.
Here.
De Leon here.
We've established a quorum. Colleagues, we're going to go to file item number one. Why don't we go to file item number one? We'll skip over two. We'll go 1, 3 through 10. So there'll be file items number one. Oh, that's right. Okay. 1, 3 through 9, I should say. Can I get a motion? We have a motion made by Ms. Mitchell. Madam Secretary, please call the roll.
Senators Cannella.
Aye.
Cannella, aye. Leyva.
Aye.
Leyva, aye. Mitchell.
Aye.
Mitchell, aye. Runner. De Leon.
Aye.
De Leon, aye.
Motion passes on a 4-0 vote. We're going to go to file item number two. That is the appointee that's required to appear before the Senate Rules Committee. I see they brought the big guns here that's present here today. You know. We have Ms. Lisa Ann Mangut. Please come up. Ms. Mangut, welcome. You are currently the Director of Parks and Recreation for DPR for the state of California. Why don't we, if you want to introduce any loved ones, family members, friends, please do so, who come
Thank
today.
Thank you. I would, Mr. Chair. Today, my parents, my mom and my dad, Tom and Joanne Hammond, have joined me, and also my son and my daughter, Mason and Sydney Mangut. And in the front row is my fiancé, Michael Wilkening.
Right there. Okay, welcome.
Thank you.
Absolutely, welcome. Why don't we start off with an introduction of yourself, what you believe your vision is. We'll try to keep it succinct as best as possible, and we'll open up to questions and answers, commentaries from the members.
Thank you.
Okay.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair, members. Thank you for this opportunity to speak to all of you. I'm honored that Governor Brown appointed me to serve as the director of this department. And I have the privilege of serving alongside the dedicated staff of California State Parks and also the commissioners appointed to the four commissions. Our robust partnerships, which includes volunteers, nonprofits, concessionaires, other governmental entities, tribal representatives, all allow us to better serve our visitors and also help us protect and preserve the iconic places that we care for, the state's most significant cultural, natural, and historic resources. I think what's really important is that we are at a very pivotal moment in time for this department. The level of commitment from the administration, the legislature, and all of our stakeholders to make long-lasting transformative changes has created a very unique opportunity for California. Last year, the Parks Forward Commission made its recommendations to improve our California state parks, but left it to the administration to craft very specific initiatives. And so in turn, the administration created the transformation team. The transformation team is working with the department to develop very specific initiatives that target the themes outlined in the Parks Forward report. I am committed to this effort, and I would like to share with you some of the examples of the things that we've accomplished. One, we are opening up positions throughout the organization at State Parks so that our staff more closely reflect the diverse demographics of this state. We have actually already opened up the top jobs out in the field to people who aren't just park rangers, but who may be qualified because of other professional backgrounds. We are modernizing how we interact with our visitors. Today, they can use debit and credit cards in more state parks across the state, and also panoramic images of more than half of our parks are available online, which help our visitors plan their trips. We're reaching more youth by expanding our video conferencing program that connects park staff along with youth. And oftentimes we're reaching youth in the state that have never stood in a forest, never seen the ocean, and never been in a state park. This year we will be opening a new urban state park, which is very exciting for us. It's LA Historic Park. Our next urban park will be in the Bay Area, and it'll be Candlestick Park. And both of these parks together will establish connections between state parks and urban communities. The future of California state parks is bright because of the collective focus of the administration, of the legislature, and the many stakeholders, including Parks Forward. I am proud of Parks' recent accomplishments, but in many ways, these are just the very important first steps, and we have much work left to do. So thank you for the opportunity to speak to you, and I look forward to working with you
as we go forward. Thank you very much, Ms. Manigat. So when we start with questions and commentaries from members, Ms. Leyva.
Thank you, Mr. Pro Tem. Good afternoon, Ms. Manigat. It was very nice meeting with you earlier. We talked a little bit about it. The Huffington Post recently ran an extensive article in March regarding national parks. Out here, no one can hear you scream, the dangerous culture of male entitlement and sexual hostility hiding within America's national parks and forests. I was wondering if you could elaborate a little bit on that and our discussion that we had.
Yes, we also read that article, and we share the same level of interest that you did. We recognize that in California State Parks, we're fairly unique as an organization. We are decentralized. So we need to do an even have an even more robust effort to make sure that we train our folks about the importance of sexual harassment and how you create a safe working environment for our employees. So while we meet, we have training and policies and procedures. Over the last 3 years, rather than having our staff come to headquarters to receive this training, we are taking our training out on the road. So we go to the field. So we go where our employees work, and we've taken our sexual harassment training and tailored it to be more reflective of the real life and work experiences that our staff may be experiencing. We update those policies and procedures every year. We're going through another robust update. We're very pleased that over the last 3 years, our complaints have actually declined by 40%. And when we don't just take that as success, we then ask the tough questions of ourselves to figure out what does that mean. And I think that there's a direct correlation between that and actually taking taking our training out to the field. We also look for any trends. If we start to see trends in reporting from certain areas, then we know that we have to have more targeted, proactive outreach rather than just sitting back and waiting for reports of incidences.
Very good. And have you found the staff to be receptive to the training?
Yes, very much so. And also, we are in the middle, one of our transformative initiatives is that we're developing a leadership training program. And so it's going to be very important that we embed that conversation so that, and we also talk about the uniqueness of state parks and the types of circumstances, the work environment that we have, and that we take the leaderships of the future, the leaders of the future, and sensitize them to that. So that will be part of that training.
Good. That is very good to hear, and I would ask that you just stay on that, because anyone who reads that report will probably find it just as appalling as you and I
yes.
did. I wanted to comment on the wedge, the little housing units that have been built. I think 17 of them have been built, and I'm very excited that they were designed and created at Cal Poly Pomona, which is in my district. Mm-hmm. And I'm wondering if you have plans to build more and where they would be.
Absolutely. That's our cabins initiative. One of the things in working with Parks Forward, through some of their surveys, they recognized that some of the more diverse communities and people that are non-traditional campers and park users identified that as a potential barrier to come and spending time in California State Parks. So that was really the idea under which kind of the notion of cabins was actually born. So we did have that wonderful partnership. One of the first places that we're looking at is Angel Island. If you look at the wedge, I think it houses about 3 people. We are actually expanding it a bit to accommodate groups and populations that want to come and have larger gatherings. And so we're being very mindful about how we situate them in Angel Island.
Terrific. Well, that's very good. Thank you very much. Mm-hmm. Thank you, Mr. Pro Tem. That's all I have.
Thank you very much, Ms. Leyva. And I want to, so for my own purposes, make sure I get the correct pronunciation, because I've been saying Manigat. It's Manigat?
It is Manigat.
Manigat. Okay, it's a little more fancier. Manigat. Okay, so. All right. With that, Mr. Cannella.
Thank you, sir. So we just talked a few minutes ago, and I was satisfied with our discussion. You were very thorough in your answers, and I appreciate that. And really, the main issues I was concerned about was the budgetary issues. Mm-hmm. Prior to you being at the state Parks Department, there were money being hid in other accounts, and in my district, there was a threat of closure of the parks, and the neighbors came together, the citizens came together and raised money, that we found out that there was actually money set aside. So I was very comfortable with the safeguards that you have in place now to make sure that doesn't happen. Also, I was very interested in the OHV Trust Fund. It's good to hear that the governor is proposing to pay back that money. I understand we're going to have a $31 million shift for the state park system. I hope that doesn't continue. I mean, obviously, the OHV, they need that money to maintain their facilities. One-time shift when they're paying back $110 million is probably fine, but we certainly can't continue to rely on that money. So hopefully the proposal next year will not include that. But other than that, I thought it was a great meeting. I think that you're doing a great job, and I think you'll continue to do a great job. So thank you.
Thank you very much, Mr. Cannella. Ms. Mitchell.
Thank you, sir. Hello again. I appreciated the time we spent in talking about the other hat you wear, and that is as an organization leader. And so we spent quite a bit of time really talking about, particularly in an organization that has had some negative press that really had the potential to influence a broader attitude about government and our efficiency and effectiveness. And so we had a lengthy conversation about the culture shift that you've helped to lead. I'm very impressed with your leadership capacity, and have a couple of additional questions that I'm not going to spend the time now, but we'll have staff email you because they're more program specific that came to my attention after the fact. But I'm very proud to make the motion for your confirmation, if the pro tem will accept it. Thank you for the conversation.
Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Mitchell. Ms. Monget, we had, a very constructive conversation, and I enjoyed listening to you yesterday. You were quite comprehensive, and I want to kind of go back a little bit. Because as Ms. Mitchell just mentioned, what is factual is DPR has had a number of very negative press stories about DPR, the culture, the systemic challenges that you have inherited right now. I know that you're making inwards, making progress that's quantifiable and that you can measure and actually verify. As you had mentioned a few moments earlier, you have a very decentralized, if you will, department, where you have very powerful superintendents and they make a lot of decisions. You know, and I don't know if these are unilateral decisions, decisions that have to be approved, you know, by the mothership, in this case, the director of DPR, but walk us through a little how the DPR system works, because I think a lot of folks aren't familiar with the structure of DPR, and I think a lot of folks are actually quite astonished or quite surprised how decentralized the system is, and what are the positives and what are the negatives? I can offer a few perspectives with regards to the positives, being closer to the community, being closer mm-hmm. to the needs of the folks, at the same time, and a detachment, if you will, from the director. And I can also see what the negatives and positives are, with a much more stronger structure with regards to the director being involved in a lot of the decision-making at the ground level. So share with us some of your thoughts on that issue.
So the ultimate responsibility resides with me. So structurally, the way that we're structured, we have a director, and then we have a deputy director of park operations that oversees 21 districts. So your 280 parks are organized into 21 districts across the state. So Mr. Chair, you're referring to our district superintendents are our top leaders in those 21 districts. You're absolutely correct. These are very important positions. In a lot of ways, I think it's probably one of the most important positions in the department, because when you really think about parks, parks are local, right? Parks are local, and a lot of it's important to have a leader there that has all of those relationships, has the ability to work with partners, all of the types of partners we've discussed here, and then also with local communities. So making sure that those relationships are there is very important, but that communication and that connection between there and headquarters is very important. Now, we have been decentralized, of course, since the beginning of the organization, and so oftentimes I think we really should have this down, right? We should be able to take our show on the road and train all other agencies on how do you communicate with a decentralized organization. But in fact, I think we've put in a lot of structural changes. We are doing, I think part of what you're getting to is kind of the notion of culture, right, with this organization. And what we found is when you get to culture, it's you first stand up very strong administrative managerial practices. You need to be very clear about the priorities and the direction that this organization is going. And you can't just say it once or twice. It needs to be said and be reflected in all actions and the types of people that you're promoting and the things that you celebrate within the organization. Right now, I think we benefit tremendously from this transformation team effort. Because the transformation team, through that effort, every single week, every single employee in the department is highlighted one of our transformative efforts. When we talk to our Parks and Rec commissioners and we share information with our Boating and Waterways commissions and also our State Historic Parks Commission and also our OHV commissioners, we talk about transformation. We talk about the many themes, about relevancy, and we have honest conversations about where are those examples of excellence in the field and how can we scale it across the system. Now, in the past, our district superintendents were really limited from one professional background. You must be a peace officer, one of our rangers, to serve in those top leadership positions. Now, that's an issue that's been before the legislature. There's been various reports, and there's been interest in changing that. So we're very proud that we've just changed that.
Let me interrupt you right there. Do you have any idea why we did that back in the day, whenever we did that? Why upper management could only be peace officers? Because and this predates you, obviously. If you don't know, that's okay. But it's a very curious decision making, because that means that the individuals who are making the decisions for an institution are almost exclusively or primarily law enforcement agents. You know, and I find that very peculiar. With a park service system that's mission is to provide access to nature and open space to all citizens. Not saying that you can't be an officer, a peace officer, and not do a good job, but to say that everybody that goes up the ranks, the way it's structured, it's very peculiar and very odd. You know, again, this predates you, but if you have any insight that you could share with us, I'd just be curious.
I really can't speak.
Or perhaps Nettie at one time when, you know, and she's a very busy woman, you know. But, yeah.
But I think you're kind of getting to kind
Baker.
Of the root as to why this is such a priority for us, right? Mm-hmm. That we need to be able to broaden the pool of candidates to serve as our top leaders in the organization. Mm-hmm. Right now, the chain of command, it's myself, our chief deputy. Our deputy director of park operations comes from a business background and also an acquisitions and development background. She is not a peace officer. We do have a very strong, rangers, and we have our law enforcement arm. It's very important. But what we want to do is open up opportunities so that your interpreters can compete. So you want to set up career paths. So while we're very excited about this first initial step of changing it, now, so your top district superintendent is no longer required to and limited to a background of law enforcement. You now have to go through the organizational structure and make sure that there are opportunities and career paths for everyone. So that's the next step, and that's a heavy lift, and we're working very closely with CalHR. The other reason that that's very important is because you have to look at the pipeline. When you talk about diversity within our organization, it's not just at the top, sure. But what are the things that we can make it easier to bring youth in at the very entry level, the mid level, and at the top? And as we've examined the organization, we found that the way we're structured, we've been limited through our classification system to primarily promote people who are existing park employees. So that's a problem if you're talking about really kind of bringing in people with new ideas and vision and innovation, and if you're looking for diversity. So being able to open ourselves up in that manner really addresses those barriers and gives us more flexibility.
I think so, absolutely, because I think the, I don't know how far you've advanced in opening up the system, but clearly you had a very closed system that was very predictable in who the upper management and therefore the decision making, the type of decision making that would take place when it doesn't open up, if you will, to all individuals to have an opportunity to move up the ranks.
Mr. Chair, you may be interested, just to get a sense of the rate and the speed with which we're moving forward on this, is that while we secured that authority last year with the State Personnel Board, while we have 21 district superintendents out in the field, nearly 25% are already serving or we're vacant and we are recruiting for these new positions.
Okay, so a quarter of the 21 superintendents right now,
mm-hmm.
Okay, which is a good sign that shows that you're mm-hmm. advancing and moving. You had mentioned the Urban Park Initiative, and maybe you can talk a little about that. Again, this predates you, and I want to make sure that stands on the record. I had an opportunity to actually meet Senator Anthony Cannella for the very first time when he was the mayor of the great city of Ceres, you know. And I didn't know Mr. Cannella, but he received me with a marching band, you know, in Modesto, yeah, with the whistle, you know, the whole bit, you know, and we had a staff, you know, and the hat, the whole bit. And I flew down, I was an assembly member at the time, but I was moving Assembly Bill AB 31, and you were one of the beneficiaries because we made sure that it was fair across the board, that rural communities had access to drawing down on Chapter 9 dollars from Prop 84. One of the lessons that I had received greatly was the awkwardness, the clunkiness of the culture of DPR, not being able to be flexible and understanding that parks are not just in the coast or 300 miles away, far out of reach for many working families who don't have the financial wherewithal mm-hmm. to pack up and take off for a whole weekend. Therefore, the Cornfield Yards or the LA Historic Park, as we know it today, to give some context for the members today, they were going to build, which is adjacent to Chinatown, they were going to build a business park there. The community came together, both Chinese Americans, Chinese immigrants, as well as Latinos and other people of color came together to say, we want a park, we want open space. And there was an acquisition of appropriation of dollars to make the acquisition, and you know, through the budget of last year, we're able to get some more money to actually make it come to fruition. So this park would not have come to fruition if it wasn't for the community advocating and agitating and say, hey, we deserve a park in our area, as opposed to getting in the car and driving to the coast and other places. Go a little bit into the Urban Park Initiative, because I remember when I dealt with DPR, it was very cumbersome, it was very difficult, the culture was not open, accepting, or prepared to take this money, but put that money to use the way we visualized it, as opposed to some other folks, how they visualize parks and open space and geographically where they should be, you know, located. It's, I think, a paradigm shift from within mm-hmm. DPR. That's not accustomed to these types of initiatives, but you are proactively moving forward an urban park initiative. Why don't you give us, share a little insight as to what you're doing?
Sure. I think there's really kind of two categories in how we play a very important role about how we help park poor communities. One is a direct delivery of services. So, for example, LA Historic Park will be a California state park in an urban center. And you're absolutely right. This was not always a sure thing. You know, people are very excited and passionate about it. And we're very excited that we'll be opening it this year. But part of getting to that culture is we sat back and we asked ourselves, how do we keep up this momentum in the future? And so rather than just treating this as a one-time event for California State Parks, we know that there's a Candlestick Park property, that discussion that's going to be happening in the future. So how do we engage the community there? What we learned that was so important with LA Historic Park is that community outreach early and often, and earlier than most people realize is necessary. Otherwise, we find ourselves that we're building the state park that the state or the bureaucracy, you know, in headquarters in Sacramento envisions, rather than the park that's reflective of how the community wants to engage with us. And then also part of that is making sure that the interpretive programs are reflective of the rich history of that location. So the governor's budget includes a proposal, it's our relevancy proposal, that takes kind of best practices that we've learned at LA Historic, and we want to put a community liaison staff person there, that what they do is make sure that that outreach continues, and we take that same model and we extrapolate it and apply it to the Bay Area with Candlestick. The other important role that you've touched upon is that people are provided services through an ecosystem of parks, right? Whether it be federal, local, or state parks. Now, through AB 31, you made $400 million available for us to identify park per communities, and we established a grant program. I'm hoping that now you're hearing much better things about this program than probably in the beginning. We have, since I think 2000, provided over about $2 billion in bond funding. So we've served as an agent to establish these grants. So we participate in all the communities across the state through that program. One of the things that I think is a really significant accomplishment is over the last couple and several years, we've developed models so that we can model and identify for any area in California the types that are parks, the parks that are there, so you can more easily have a conversation about where a park per community may be. And so the grants and the funding and the good things that have happened out in the state with these funds, we have more data and we can have those conversations. So that becomes very important to the organization too.
Thank you very much, and I really do appreciate very much that the new type of thinking, because the status quo, we have the greatest park system in the nation, no question about it. And as you make reference to the larger ecosystem of federal parks, local, you know, city and county parks, and then the state parks, and, you know, historically, you know, city and county have primarily been responsible for the establishment and the maintenance and operation of local parks. But this paradigm shift, because of the origins of the resources, the money, in this case, it was AB 31 through Prop 84, Chapter 9, we had an abundance of dollars that we could control and say, hey, as a result, and as a result, we created through DPR, through the grant funding, 103 brand new parks throughout the state of California. 103 parks that otherwise there were no parks in existence, which I think is a good thing for communities that are the most park-starved in the state of California. And I would only hope that with this paradigm shift that we're gonna even double down, triple down when we have an opportunity to draw down on more resources, whether it's a future bond of some sort, you know, in the future, near future, or sometime in the future, that we can even double down and triple down to invest even more so in these historically park-starved communities. Last question. We went through a severe budget crisis. We all know that. Worst economic recession since 1929. A whole a number of agencies' budgets were cut, and DPR was cut very severely, you know, to the bone. There was efforts on the private sector side, philanthropic side, nonprofit side to aid and assist as best as possible to keep the doors open with skeletal staffs, trying not to have a state park mothballed, because what we know what the fiscal consequences would be, it cost us a hell of a lot more money in the back end when we initially opened up that park. But there was one thing about DPR's culture, again, it was not quick. Flexible, it couldn't pivot to know how to receive money, you know, from the private sector and work with other folks who wanted to be helpful to DPR. Again, that to me that goes back to culture, territory. This is our institution. Talk a little about that right there.
That is one of the things that we've heard. We haven't always been, we are very...
And of course, this predates you. Yes.
Sure, but while it predates me, this is that moment in time that we can address all of these things, right? And this is very important. We have all of these wonderful partners and communities that want to come and help us, but we haven't always been ideally situated to receive this help. So one of the things that we've done is we've taken all of our staff that work with partners, whether it be concessionaires, nonprofits, volunteers, and we've organized them all in one location within the department. So there's that one point of contact. So hopefully those conversations will be more efficient. We also have been working to identify, and there have been some recent statute changes through SB 204 and AB 549 last year, at looking at how, what are maybe some of those barriers and what are the things that we can do to make it easier to partner with us, particularly with certain groups like youth groups and some of the underserved communities. So that's really the lens with which we're looking at that. Also, I think some of the other things that made it just culturally difficult to help us is that we didn't have the kinds of information that was necessary. So for example, during that difficult time, one of the common questions asked of us, not only by the legislature, but by also various potential partners, is how much does it cost to run this individual park? We could not, at that time, answer that question. Today we can. So annually we provide a report that lines out the expenditures for each of the 280 parks, and we provide that to the legislature, and it's posted on our website annually. So that culture, part of that culture is making sure that this information is important, these are the people's parks, and when you have that kind of data and information, you can have a more informed discussion with a potential partner.
Thank you very much. Why don't we go to those who are supporters of the interim director of DPR. Those who are supporters, come on up, just state your name, organization that you represent, and let's be succinct.
Good, thank you. My name is Sakita Grant with the Green Lining Institute. I am legal counsel with our environmental equity team, and we work on racial and social justice issues and how to advance opportunities for healthy communities and opportunities for economic advancement within low-income communities and communities of color. Based on remarks, I don't know that you need a whole lot more support, but we are here in support of the confirmation of Lisa Mangit as Director of Departments of Parks and Recreation. This is because Lisa is committed, as we've heard, to ensuring California's parks are welcoming and accessible, which is very important for our communities, accessible to the youth, urban, and diverse communities. When people don't have access to nature, they're deprived of safe spaces, places to exercise, to escape noisy daily life, and community gathering places to meet with family and friends. To ensure that we get this right, we joined other park champions to form the Parks Now Coalition, which works for better access for green space. And as part of our initiative and the priorities we have, we know that they're aligned with Lisa's, and that we're therefore happy to support her as a director as she takes on this challenge to bring the state parks into the 21st century, and we applaud her dedication and her inclusiveness and equity-driven focus. Thank you.
Thank you. Next witness and support.
Hello, my name is Genevieve Gale. I'm here on behalf of Save the Redwoods League. The department has long been a partner of the league and helped us with our mission of protecting and restoring the Redwood Forest. And we think the director, Manga, is especially well qualified to lead the department, and we stand in support of her confirmation.
Thank you. A next witness in support.
My name is Michael Lyons, and I'm here representing Audubon, California. And we wanted to state our strong support for Ms. Mangat. We've had a chance to meet with her, and we really do feel that she is very well qualified and competent to lead the department, not only to increase its inclusivity and access for all members of California, which is important to our members and the communities, but also its natural resources. The state parks are essential for the conservation of many of the birds and other wildlife that are in the state, and we had a productive discussion along those lines, and we feel that she's able to lead the department in all of these aspects. So a strong statement of support.
Thank you. Next witness in support.
Hi, Margo Parks on behalf of the California State Parks Foundation. We're here to encourage and support the confirmation of the director for this position. As she mentioned, she has been very much involved in the transformation process, and we believe she has been and will continue to be critical to that success. So we encourage your support of her confirmation. Thank you.
Next witness in support.
Good afternoon, Chair and committee members. My name is Jose Gonzalez. I'm the founder of Latino Outdoors. We're a relatively young committee and organization, and we're here to support Director Lisa Manguet to this appointment. It's really important because we've had a strong interest since the beginning of the Parks Forward Commission, and we have been pushing them to make sure that the implementation goes well. And now working closely with them, and just as a sign of success, just this past weekend, we had our first leadership campout at Malibu Creek State Park. And the district superintendent came and greeted us. And it was also important to have staff, recent Latino hire, Luis Rincon, also be part of that programming. So I think to be able to see how this is unfolding is really crucial. And so we here support her leadership to make sure that this keeps going. So excited to be here.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Next, I think perhaps last witness.
Yeah.
Welcome.
Real brief. Mr. Chair and members, Doug Houston representing the California Park and Recreation Society, State Park Partners Coalition, and the East Bay Regional Park District. We're here endorsing her. The only criticism I would have is she's got to change that last name. I cannot pronounce it to save myself. maybe there will be a change on the horizon, but endorsing the confirmation today. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Thank you much. Other witness in support. Other witness in support. Seeing none, those in opposition. No folks in opposition. We do have a motion that's been made by Ms. Mitchell. I will say the following. I think that you have really advanced the ball, this institution. I do think it's a still ongoing project. I think there's still a lot of work to do. I think there's gonna be a lot of eyes watching DPR very closely, inside this building as well as outside. I do think there'll be a lot of folks who will be rooting for you and are hoping the very best for you as you move the agenda that will make this agency a transparent and effective agency. But I do want to underscore, I think there's more work to do, a lot more work to do at DPR. But I do believe, I do believe again, there are gonna be a lot of folks who are gonna be very supportive of you. I know that there's a lot of folks inside this building in both the Senate as well as the Assembly. Who are going to be moving policy measures that are going to impact either directly or indirectly DPR, and it's my hope in a very positive fashion. I am impressed by you and your person because you're not walking into an agency where everything is running perfectly. You walk into a challenged agency, it seems like you're ready, you know, for the task. You've been doing it, and you recognize you still have a ways to go, and that's what sort of kind of gives me encouragement. I am impressed by your dedication, by your commitment. I will admit, you know, when Nettie floated your name, I said, well, where's she from? I said, DOF. I said, I'm not impressed, you know? You know, what is someone from DOF going to know about, you know? They know numbers, and is she gonna be a slash and burn individual who doesn't care about the quality of services that need to be provided to all individuals. So I am impressed. So with that, we will move forward a motion that is made by Ms. Mitchell. Madam Secretary, please call the roll.
Senators Cannella.
Aye.
Cannella, aye. Leyva.
Aye.
Leyva, aye. Mitchell.
Aye.
Mitchell, aye. Runner. DeLeon.
Aye.
DeLeon, aye.
Ms. Manguet, or Manguet, your motion is passed. Congratulations.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. You're welcome. Congratulations. Okay, folks, we're going to move on to an executive session. So what we're going to do is we're going to need the room cleared out.